I just want to open with one bit of good news. On Sunday morning, I always intend to be serious and to read the Newsweek in review with my coffee, but I always end up reading the style section to see if I know anybody who got married. I have very important news for you. After years and years of reading about intermarriages in the New York Times and feeling a little sick each time I saw another Jewish name with a non-Jewish person, I am happy to report that the main story in today's style section of the Times is about a young Orthodox woman who met a man who was not Jewish, made it very clear that nothing could develop between them unless he would be Jewish, and he converted, he became an Orthodox Jew, and then they married each other. So I'm happy to tell you that Mashiach times are upon us, and that this is a wonderful thing. Okay. Rabbi Haver really gave the... Is it good? A little higher? Okay. Is this better? Okay. Rabbi Haver gave the perfect introduction for me to segue from his ending into what I'm going to speak about. And he even took one of my sources, but it's just as well, because it will be a natural following to the shiur that you just now heard. When you look at the Seder is really a Beit Midrash session. What you're doing at the Seder is you're taking a number of texts, a number of verses, a number of psukim, especially from Shmos, from the accounts in Exodus of the going out from Egypt, but from other places as well. And what you're trying to do through analyzing these psukim and analyzing Mishnayos, Gemaros, Medrashim, lots and lots of Divrei Chazal, what you're trying to do is to understand what exactly Yitzias Mitzrayim was, to relive the experience, as Rabbi Haber said at the end of his shir, and to really understand what freedom is all about. There are many themes that run through the Haggadah. There's the story of the chosenness of the Jewish people. There's the story of the history of the Jewish people. There's the story of our going from slavery to Yitzias Mitzrayim, to Matan Torah, as the paradigm of Jewish history. There's the arc of our history from the year 2448 to the Geula at that time, and to the ultimate Geula that we hope in 5766 will come in Bimhera, that will come soon. There's an understanding of our place in Jewish history, and there's an understanding, among many other themes, of what freedom is all about. And that's the theme that I would like to speak about, and I would like to speak specifically about women's understanding of freedom at the time of Yitzias Mitzrayim, at the time that we went out from Egypt. After all, what we could do is simply read the account in the Chumash, from Shmos, Be'era, Bo, and half of B'Shalach, and just go over the story again and again, year after year, of the miracle of Hashem taking us from slavery to freedom. And every day we do mention going out of Egypt. We mention it a lot of times in our davening. When you start becoming aware of it, you realize, yes, it's the third paragraph of Shema, that's about Yitzias Mitzrayim. Yes, right before Shemona Esrei, Et Shachas and Mariv, it's about Yitzias Mitzrayim. Of course, we say Az Yashir every single day, and there we are recapitulating the experience of going out of Mitzrayim. And you'll find other references to going out of Egypt also in different places in the davening, and in Rosh Chodesh, in every Yom Tov, when we say B'tzeis Yisrael Mitzrayim and Hallel. Again and again, it's refreshing our memory that this is the central basis of our becoming the Jewish people and of our relationship with Hashem. But at the Seder, we want something more to happen. We don't want to just mention it. We don't want just to remember it and just to think about the event. As Rabbi Haber pointed out, what the Brisker Rav said is, what we're trying to do is transmit it to another person, to recognize the development of the story, and to re-experience it. What we want to do is to think about how we cope with anti-Semitism under Hashem's supervision, how we hope that we won't suffer again, and that's why it's important to us to see the makos in full detail and try to extend the number of the makos. So we should say we hope not to experience these things again, and to appreciate what Matan Torah meant, what the giving of the Torah meant, and what looking forward to being in Eretz Yisrael, and to the complete experience that we hope will come, Bachris Hayamim, what that will be. So, for example, one parish, just to give one quick example. After we say Tzach Adash Ba'achav, the mnemonic device to remember the 10 Makos, and we say a pasuk from Tehillim, Yishalach Bam Charon Apo, Evra, Vazam, Vitzara, Mishlachas Malachei Ra'im. And then we have the two interpretations of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. And what are they both trying to do? They're trying to both see as many plagues as possible, as many difficulties as possible that the Egyptians experienced, because of the promise to Hashem that we will not go through what they went through. That's why when I look at the Haggadah, I mentally put in two different punctuation marks. For what Rabbi Eliezer says, because he thinks that there were four makos, there's a colon after Charon Apo. Yishalach bam Charon Apo. He will send his anger out against them. And then Rabbi Eliezer lists four. Ephraim, Evra, Vazam, Vitzara, Mishlachas Malachei Ra'im. With Rabbi Akiva, he puts the colon back a little bit. Rabbi Akiva says, Yishalach bam, colon, Charon Apo, Evra, Vazam, Vitzara, Mishlachas Malachei Ra'im. This is one small example of the kind of parish going on here to try to make us understand how much we hope will be guarded against and how much we hope we will flourish under the guidance of Hashem. If you look at how the Haggadah developed, you see that it's an accretion over the generations. If you look in Mishnah Pesachim, in Arvei Pesachim, in the 10th parak of Pesachim, you'll find a complete outline of the Seder there. But over the years, more and more was added until we have the Haggadah of today. You can even see the accretions in one tefillah, in Nishmas. From Nishmas till Lecha Levadcha Anachnu Modim, that comes from the time of the Mishnah. Then from Ilufinu Malei Shira Kayam until V'chol Chomal Lefanecha Tishtachaveh, that was added in Talmudic times. And then from L'chol Levavot Yira'ucha until Hamelcha Yoshev Al Kisei Ram V'nisa, that came toward the time, during the time of the Gaonim. So you can see that this has been a gradual build-up, and we are now dealing with a text that has been accepted and codified over the years, but our attempt is to understand why were these Mefarshim, why were these Midrashim, why were these Mishnayos, why were these Gemaras, why were these selected as a means to make that story in Shmos Va'erabo and B'Shalach come alive for us again each year. What I'd like to concentrate on is Man Chiruseinu, the time of our freedom, and I'd like to take an explanation that Rabbi Dr. Avraham Twersky gave for what freedom is all about. Freedom is not just from physical slavery. Freedom is from whatever enslaves us. Sometimes what enslaves us, and this is Dr. Twersky's specialty, sometimes what enslaves us, Chas V'Shalom, is an addiction. And a person who is under an addiction, from the outside you can say, why does his brain need that cocaine? Why does his brain need that alcohol? But for the person who's caught in the addiction, he can't see beyond it to the fact that he can be free of this addiction, and he is caught and enslaved in that addiction. Sometimes our addiction is to a pattern of behavior, and we are just so used to a pattern of behavior that we can't get out of that pattern of behavior. And it takes a tremendous burst of freedom to say, I have to stop being in this rut and being in this kind of behavior, and I have to rise above it to freedom in my actions and not always react in the same way. I'm thinking of a wonderful New Yorker cartoon which shows a husband and a wife yelling at each other, and one is saying to the other, I don't know what we're arguing about anymore either, but let's keep yelling until we remember. And that happens to characterize a number of relationships where there's just a pattern of anger, whether it's between mother and daughter, whether it's between daughter-in-law and mother-in-law, whether it's between husband and wife, whether it's between siblings. And if one could only jump up out of it for a minute and get free from that mindset, get free from that rut, that person could realize this is not a productive way to live. I thought that my brother-in-law put it brilliantly when my sister Abby married him. He said, Abby, let's not have the same argument again and again the way other people do. Let's have a different argument each time. But he was really right. Don't fall into a rut. And if you have a sense of humor about it, which my brother-in-law Aaron Rabin does, if you have a sense of humor about it, you can find yourself jumping out of the slavery to a way of behaving and into freedom and into a new way of interacting with each other. Sometimes we also need to find freedom from a mindset. And the mindset of slavery is, I can't get out of it. The mindset of slavery is, nothing belongs to me, my body doesn't belong to me, my time doesn't belong to me, I am master of nothing, and therefore I can't rise up against the oppressor. That's why Yetzias Mitzrayim is so significant. Because when Moshe Rabbeinu first came, B'nai Yisrael were still enmeshed in that mindset of slavery. And to have the freedom to rise above that mindset and to say, I can get out of this, that was a tremendous thing. And that's why the Torah tells us about the backsliding of Bnei Yisrael later on, remembering the wonderful cucumbers that they had in Mitzrayim. What are they talking about? Those wonderful cucumbers went with total subjection. But the mindset of slavery takes time to get out of. In fact, my husband explains the Mishnah about Charus and Cherus, Ein Lecha Ben Chorin, Ela Misha Oseik BaTorah, in terms of Yitzias Mitzrayim. Because what was the first mitzvah Hashem gave us when we went out of Mitzrayim? HaChodesh HaZelachem. This month will be for you. What was Hashem telling us? This month is for you. Your time belongs to you. This was a whole new concept for a slave who is used to being told every moment of the day where he has to be and what he has to do. To have your own time means you're a free person. To have control of your time is very different from a slave mentality. But what did Hashem say? HaChodesh hazeh lachem, Rosh Chodeshim. He gave us rules even within that freedom. Because freedom is not just total hefker, it's not wildness, it's not total abandon. Within freedom, you have to have a structure. And that's why Ein Lecha Ben Chorin, Ela Misha Oseik BaTorah. Your freedom becomes abandoned and becomes meaningless and becomes, who knows what to do with it, unless you have a structure in it. The Torah gives us that structure. So even when our time became free, it was HaChodesh HaZelechem Rosh Chodeshim, but time has special meaning for a Jew. Time has structure for a Jew. And within that structure, this a whole new meaning for me while preparing this year, we have Bechira Chavshis. We have free will, a very significant Jewish concept, and that is that freedom is always yours. You can rise above whatever it was that was holding you down, against the psychological or the emotional or the intellectual or the experiential rut that one was in. You can always rise above it. As I say, a sense of humor is often an excellent way to rise above it because then you can see it in perspective. If you're laughing at it, you're already not enmeshed in it. But that's not always possible. But this is what the Haggadah is teaching us. It's teaching something about freedom. Where do we see this kind of freedom, this kind of rising above? For example, Nachshon Ben Aminadav, the person who jumped first into the Yam Suf, because everybody else was afraid, and everybody else said, how can we jump into this water? Who knows what's going to happen to us? We're going to drown. And it was Nachshon Ben Aminadav who was able to rise above the usual perception of what it is to jump into the sea and to say, no, this is a whole new experience, and we have to try this out. And that's why we say in the Shira, Haisa Yehuda L'Kadsho, because Nachshon Ben Aminadav was from the Shevet Yehuda, and who? Kidesh Shem Hashem. He's the one who sanctified Hashem's name by paving the way for a whole new way of experience and showing we can jump into Yam Suf, Hashem will save us, we can go through. When it comes to freedom from conventional, incidentally, Nachshon Ben Aminadav was married to Miriam, according to one Midrash. The women showed freedom from conventional thought in differing from what they were told. Yocheved and Miriam, who are Shifra and Puah, said, we don't care what the decree of Paro is, and we don't care that he says we have to throw the children into the water. They had the courage, they had the audacity, they had the innovativeness to say, no, we're going to save the children anyway. And when you think of it, it was royalty that they were defying, in a time when royalty had absolute power over everyone's life. And yet they were willing to defy Paro and to let the children live. When you think of what the courage was of Miriam to watch Moshe when he was out there in the water being saved in the teva, in that small vessel. And when you think of her courage in going to the Bas Paro, who after all, one of the reasons that they went to the river was that royalty pretended at that time that it was above human needs. And they went to the river to take care of their human needs so that nobody should see that that's what they were taking care of. And later on, that's how a king got killed. A famous story later on in Shoftim, a king who was in his private chambers and his servants were afraid to disturb him, also taking care of his private needs because royalty considered itself to be like divinity and wanted people to believe that about them. And yet Miriam had the courage to come forward to the Bas Paro and to propose that a Jewish woman come into the royal palace and raise that child. And where do we see the courage of Miriam expressed? Where do we find reference to what the women did in the Seder? We read the Pesukim, V'omar lach, Here's what it's referring to in a very beautiful connection of many psukim from Tanakh, which really show us one author to the Tanakh and everything tying together. What do we read in Shir HaShirim? We read, Mizos Olam in Hamidbar, Mitrapekas Al Dada, Tachas HaTapuach Orar Ticha. I aroused you under the apple tree. The apple tree is a symbol of a place where some kind of arousal happens. And what is the arousal? The arousal was what Benos Yisrael did in order to have children. So if we look at the source sheet, at the Talmud Bavli, Maseches Sota Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis, it's the second source on your sheet. I'm not going to read through the entire source, just parts of it. This is Rabbi Avera explaining that it was in the merit of the righteous women of that generation that the Jewish people were redeemed from Egypt. Why? When they would go to draw water, Hashem would prepare small fish in their pitchers. So half of what they would bring up was water, and half of what they would bring up was fish. Uva'os v'shovtos shtei kederos, achas shalchamin v'achas shadagim, umolichos eifel ba'alein lasadeh. What they would do was to cook up the two pots, and they would bring warm water, and they would bring the fish all cooked, and they would bring it to their husbands who were working in the fields. And of course the Egyptians were trying to separate Jewish husbands from Jewish wives, so that there should be no more Jewish children. Now if you go down a few lines, but they would come, they would reassure their husbands, they would take care of their husbands, they would be very kind to their husbands, they would anoint their husbands, they would do everything they could to be attractive to their husbands. Kevon Shemisabros, when they would become pregnant, Ba'os Levatehem, they would come to their homes. The Kevon Shemagiyaz Man Boldehen, when the time to give birth would arrive, Hochos Yodos Basadeh Tachas Hatapuach. They would go and they would give birth out in the field under the apple tree. And here we refer to Shir HaShirim, Shneamar, Tachas HaTapuach Arar Ticha, the same pasuk that I began with. V'Kadosh Baruch Hu Shaleach Mishmei Marom, Hashem would send angels from heaven who would cut the umbilical cord, who would wash the baby, and who would put the baby into good condition. Going on a few lines, V'Kevan Shemakirim Behem Mitzrayim, Ba'an Lahargan, when the Egyptians would realize that they had given birth, they would come to try to kill them, to try to kill the children. V'nasa lehem nes, v'nivla'im b'karka. Hashem would make a miracle happen, and the children would be swallowed up in the earth. U'mevi'in shvarim b'chorshin al gaban. So the Egyptians would bring oxen to plow up the earth. And again, Hashem would make a miracle that the children would survive, and after the Egyptians left, they would sprout up just the way that grass sprouts up. The children would come out alive. And when we come to the end of this part of the Gemara, U'shenigla HaKadosh Baruch Hu Hayam, Heim Hikiru Tchila. When Hashem was revealed at Yam Suf, at the miracle at the sea, the women recognized Hashem first, Shneamar Zekeli Va'anvehu, because we say in the Shira Al Hayam, this is my Hashem, and I will build a wonderful palace for him. I will build a wonderful sanctuary for him. Why do we know that these are the women? Zekeli, they knew this is my God because they had already seen the miracles done for them. They had seen the miracles of how the children had survived. They had seen the miracles of how the Egyptians searched for the children, and yet Hashem still made the children come up from the earth alive. And that's why it was the women who said this. And in fact, we have a separate Shira Al Hayam that was said by Miriam and the women. And that's Vatikach Miriam Hanviya Achos Aaron Esatof. Miriam, the sister of Aaron, took the timbrel, which is a kind of tambourine. It's kind of a circle with cloth spread over it. She took the timbrel or the tambourine in her hand, and all the women went out after her with tambourines and with dances. This is Shmos Tesvav Pasachav. Batahan lahem Miriam shiru lahashem ki ga'oga'a. And Miriam answered to them, sing to Hashem because he has triumphed gloriously. Sut rochvo ramabayam. The horse and its rider he has thrown into the sea. And now you look, please, in the source That's number three. Vatikach Miriam achol kanviya, achol kanviya achol Aaron. Achol Aaron lo achol Moshe. She was the sister of Aaron, not the sister of Moshe. It's a rhetorical question. I should have read it that way. Achol Aaron lo achol Moshe. The sister of Aaron and not the sister of Moshe. Amar Rav Amram, Amar Rav. V'amalei Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav. Malamed shahisamis naba kashihi achol Aaron. We learn from this that when she was the sister of Aaron, that's when she was the Neviah. Miriam HaNeviah Achos Aharon. She revealed herself as a prophetess when she was still only the sister of Aaron, not yet the sister of Moshe. But Omeris, what did she say? Asita imi sheteled bein shemoshia es Israel. My mother is destined to give birth to a child who will rescue the Jewish people. The kevan shenolad Moshe nismalei kol habayas kula or. When Moshe was born, the entire house was filled with light. Amat Avia Unushaka Arosha. Her father went, stood up, and kissed her on the head. V'amarla Biti Nizkaima Nevuasaich. And he said, my daughter, your prophecy has been fulfilled. V'kevan Shehitiluhu Layor, but when they cast Moshe into the water, and he was set afloat in a basket, not knowing if he would survive or not, Amat Avia Utupaka Arosha. Her father stood and tapped her on the head. Amar la biti hechanavu asayach, my daughter, where is your prophecy? What's happening? V'hayno dechtiv v'teitse v'teitzatzav achotil merachok l'deya mayestelo, that Miriam nitzava, Miriam stood a distance away to see what would happen to him. Leida mayestelo, leida maye basof nevu asayach, to see what would happen at the end to her prophecy. What's going on here? Miriam was the one who understood. Miriam was the one who had the belief. Miriam was the one who had the courage to act on her belief and to step out of the usual despair and to say, we will have children. I didn't do the first Gemara, the first source on the page to which Rabbi Haberd referred, where Miriam told her father, the Paro only goes there on the Scharim, your goes there on the Scharim and the Nekevos. Paro only set against the boys, you set against the boys and the girls if you don't have children. Paro only said Balam Hazeh, you're doing Balam Hazeh, Balam Haba, with which Miriam persuaded her father to go back to Yocheved, and after that everybody followed suit, and Jewish men and Jewish women continued to have children. So what do we see here? We see here that there were people like Nachshon ben Aminadav, like Miriam, who are able to go above the prevailing sentiment, and who are able to say, there's another way to look at this, there's another way to consider this, and to say, we have to think of a different way to react. We have to think of a different way to behave. We can't just go in the conventional ways that the Egyptians have set for us. And this is what Jewish women always have to do. We always have to be the ones, not just we, Jewish men have to do it also, but the whole Jewish enterprise is one of freedom of thinking, of thinking outside the box. That's why we're called Ivri. Ka'olam be'ever achad, the whole world can be on one side, va'anachnu be'ever hasheni, we're on the other side, looking at things in a different way. So we say, va'avor alayach, va'areich, mispasesa demayach, va'omar lach b'demayach hayi, va'omar lach b'demayach hayi, that pasuk from Yecheskel, and I passed over you, and I saw you weltering in your blood, and I said to you, in your blood you will live, in your blood you will live. And Mephushim take this as being about the blood that the women that came out together with the blood, that came out together with the child, when the women gave birth under the trees. And what happened under the tapuach? Rashi Amasechus Pesachim, number 5, the 5th source says, Zecher l'tapuach, shehayu yoldos b'nein sham below etzev, that Hashem let them give birth without any pain, shelo yakiru behen mitzriim, that the Mitzrayim should not recognize that they were in labor. They would only realize afterward that the women had given birth and they saw they were no longer pregnant. Dichtiv, again referring back to that pasuk, Tachas ha-tapuach orarticha, I roused you under the apple tree. What do we have as a zecher for this? Our Chachamim tell us, there's a Tosfos on this whole discussion in the Gemara, where he says, Uvetshuvat ha-gonim afaresh, Lasos charoses ba'peros. One of the reasons that we make charoses is to make it with fruits, to remember all of this that happened. To remember the apples, that's why you put apples into your charoses, to remember how the women had the courage to look beyond. And what else do we say? Because we're compared to a number of fruits. in Shir HaShirim. So Tosfos says, "V'tshuvas Hagaonim Mefaresh Lasos Charoset Vaperos Shenidmeh L'Knesset Yisrael B'Shir HaShirim." We make the charoset out of those very fruits that the Jewish people were compared to in Shir HaShirim. So first the pasuk that I've said a few times, "Tachas HaTapuach Ararticha." So we put apples into the charoset. Then we're described in the in Shir HaShirim as being Kefel HaRimon, like the pomegranate. Some people put pomegranates into the charoset. We're told Hateina Chanta Fageha, so some people put figs into the charoset. And we're told that being like an egos, Elginat egos, so we put egozim, we put nuts into the charoset. Yayin, to remember the dam, and wine, and shkedim, al shem sheshakat HaKadosh Baruch Hu al hakeitz. Here it's a play on words, that we put in almonds to remember that Hashem hastened the ending. As in the first parak of Yirmiyahu, Makhel Shaked Aniroeh, Ki Shaked Ani Al Tzvi Lasoso. It's a sign of haste and of rushing, and that Hashem rushed the Geula by a number of years, so we shouldn't have to suffer Shibud Mitzrayim for so long. So here's a beautiful symbol, referred to with a quick hint, V'Avar Leich Erech Mitzvoseses B'Damayach, V'Omar Lach B'Damayach Hayi, V'Omar Lach B'Damayach Hayi, that reminds us of what the women did, that reminds us of how the women found their freedom from being in convention, stepping above oppression, and saying we won't listen to the edicts of Pharaoh, and saying we will continue the Jewish people. And the symbol of what we did is in the charoset. That's one of the reasons given of charoset, is this whole symbolism of all the fruits to which the Jewish people are compared, but especially the apple because of tachas hatapuach or articha. There's a lot of symbolism in what we do. We all know the different reasons for the symbolisms of matzah and maror, but one interesting explanation that I read, and I didn't put down where I read it from, so I'm sorry, I'm going to have to state it without giving the source, is that matzah is a dough that does not change its state, and that's how we retained our identity even when we were in Mitzrayim, and how we maintain our identity even now in Galus. And maror is a symbol of how we struggle against depression and still find strength even while struggling against depression. Now, to look at the steps to freedom, I'd like to bring something from Dr. Kenneth Chelst, whom some of you may know. He's the son-in-law of the late Rabbi Yitzhak Simon, a mirror Talmud who taught Maimonides for many years. He's a statistician, and he was studying the statistics of why the African-American community has not been able to get out to complete freedom, and why there's still so many vestiges of a slave mentality left in the African-American community. And as he studied statistics and studied different accounts from around the world, he found out that there are several steps that a victim of oppression has to go through in order to know that he is free of the oppression and that he is really now a free person. The first thing the victim needs to know is that justice is done and that the oppressor is being punished. And when you read now in the newspapers about Darfur and about all the different places where terrible things have been done just in the last 10 years, you see the need for justice, Argentina with the disappeared people, the need for the oppressor to be punished. There has to be compensation for the suffering that one went through. You have to know that the beliefs of the oppressor are discounted. You have to know that the oppressor can't attack you again. You have to know that no one else is going to attack you. And then you have to build up your own self-image, and you have to know what your own system of beliefs will be. And Dr. Chelst told me that after he read all these accounts and all these psychological insights and all these statistics about who does survive oppression, who doesn't survive oppression, it suddenly gave him a whole new insight into Dayenu and into what winning our freedom was all about. If Hashem had just taken us out, below Asavahem Shvatim, and hadn't done the different special things that he did to show us that shikatzering ubesocha, that he made sure that the oppressor is gone, that he can't attack us again, that justice is done to the oppressor, we wouldn't yet feel free. If we hadn't been compensated, that's why it says nafal lanu es mamonam. It was very important that they give us some kind of payment for all those years of working under slave conditions. It was very important asav Eloheihem, as we say in Dayenu, to know that their gods are discounted and that the beliefs of the oppressor should not continue to bother us, should not preoccupy us. Put that behind us. But then that's not enough. Justice can be done. The oppressor can be punished. We can get compensation for all that we did. We can see that our abusers are discounted, that their beliefs are discounted. We can see they can't attack again. We can see that no one else will attack again. But the end of it, we have to know what are our beliefs. And that's why it's so important that Dayenu ends with, Nasal Nanu Et HaShabbat, Kirvanu Lifnei Har Sinai, Nasal Nanu Et HaTorah, Hechnisanu LeEretz Yisrael, Banu Lanu Et Beis HaBechira. Then we knew we were truly, truly free. With Shabbos, we had a whole new understanding of time and a day of rest, that work is not the entire preoccupation of human life. And with each of the succeeding miracles that Hashem did for us, with each of the succeeding gifts that Hashem gave us, we came closer to understanding that we indeed are really free. We're not going to be abused anymore. The oppressor is not going to victimize us anymore. We're not going to be enslaved anymore. Instead, we have our own system of belief. And I'm thinking of this now, even as I'm teaching, it's not an idea that I had before, but this really explains the whole preoccupation with how a Jewish person treats an eved. We are so concerned to treat a servant properly because we know what it was to be a servant. We know what it was to be a slave. And that's why the Torah commands us, don't repeat the abuse. The entire cycle of abuse has to stop. And you're the people who can stop it. You went through slavery. Don't perpetrate on someone else what was done to you. And that's why when our Chachamim finished going through all the halachos of how you have to treat a servant, what do they tell us? Kana eved, kana rav. If you buy a servant, you buy a master. Because a Jewish person has so many things governing his relationship with the person who works for him, it's as though he bought a master. On a very elementary plane, for example, lo salin schar sochir, not to keep the wages of a person who's working for you by the hour, which is why we pay a cleaning woman immediately and we don't tell her, I don't have the money today, next week I'll give it to you, and why we pay a babysitter immediately. Same idea. Lo talin schar sachir. Think to yourself how the other person feels. Think to yourself how the person who's waiting for that payment feels. That's the essence of the Jewish attitude towards somebody working for us. So after we go through this whole experience, and after we understand the psukim as well as we can, and we understand the transformation that happens to the Jewish people, and the transformation that should be happening in each one of us, as we each try to find out, how can I be free of the rut that I am in? How can I be free of a mindset that keeps me from realizing all that I might be, all that I might do? At the end, after we have said the whole Haggadah, then we can finally talk about Asher Ga'alanu. We can talk about the understanding of what has happened. We can understand that we are seeing ourselves as though we went out of Mitzrayim. And here Ricky Bernstein has a beautiful perush on what going out of Mitzrayim means. It's in the Women's Haggadah that Joel Wawelski put together. And Ricky Bernstein went to look up Mitzrayim and went to look up the roots of the word and found a number of different words for a number of different meanings for Mitzrayim. One is Mitzarim, narrowness. They were trying to go out of the narrowness of the way that we've always been. Another is Sar Ofek, limited horizons, narrow minds. We're trying to be large-minded. Another meaning is Sar, as in Sarva Oyev, like Haman, and we want to confront the enemy. And the ultimate meaning of going out of Mitzrayim is being lifted out of Mitzarim, being lifted out of dire straits and being lifted into freedom. I'd just like to close with one beautiful part of the whole Hallel is beautiful, but one part of the Hallel especially resonates for me, and that is what Pinchas Kahati says about one of the Tehillim that we say, the one about B'tzeis Yisrael Mitzrayim. And he points out that in that little Tehillah is encapsulated the entire story of Pesach. And that may be the reason that we say that Tehillah so often. Kuf Yudal, B'tzeis Yisrael Mitzrayim. First of all, there's Yitzias Mitzrayim. It's B'tzeis Yisrael Mitzrayim, when the Jews went out of Egypt. Then you have a reference to Kriyas Yamsuf, because we have Hayam Ra'av Hayanos, that the ocean saw and it fled. You have Matan Torah, Teharim Raktu Cha'elim, when the hills danced. You have Tchiyas HaMesim, Etalech Lifnei Hashem Baratos Sachayim, the ultimate life, Tchiyas HaMesim, when the resurrection of the dead. And finally, you go into Lolono Hashem Lolono Kiddushim Chatein Kavod, which will be Chevel Shem Mashiach, when Mashiach will come. I hope we will all experience the proper sense of Geula, the proper sense of freedom, and we're always aiming for our destiny, not just the destination, as Rav Soloveitchik puts it, that ultimately it should come Limos HaMashiach. I wish you all